From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 17th day of October, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass will be here to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. If you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll hear all of an extraordinary Commodity Week discussion with Aaron Curtis, Arlen Suderman and John Zanker. If not, you can find it online now at willag.org, and many of these stations will carry it over the weekend. Mike Zuzlo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Thank you very much, Mike, for joining me on Friday morning rather than Friday afternoon, as I'm traveling today. I appreciate that. Can you give me your overview of the marketplace in the last 24 hours to 1 week? Things have changed just a bit.
Yeah, we've got a couple big leaders, Todd, and in this week's nets, as we came into Friday morning's trade, showed this pretty clearly. And then with Friday morning's opening, the net in one of them has been completely wiped out. And so I think that's probably the best place to start. We've seen a pretty big increase in corn prices, up 2.7% from last week's close of 413. That, I think, has several origins to it. Most importantly, I think the spreads have been firming. We've talked a lot about, since the government shut down, between you and I, the old crop, new crop spreads being a very important indicator, most probably, with the idea that if we're in the dark, except for maybe some weekly export inspections, we've got to keep track of cash basis and grain spreads. And that corn spread's really started to act like we've got a tighter crop out there. And I think the trade is waking up to that. And in part, that's due to, I think, because of the slower harvest pace as we get a lot wetter. It looks as though to me on the models as we get into the second half of October. The only problem with this corn rally is that the wheat market isn't really supporting it. It's okay. It's above $5, but wheat and crude oil continue to be a real problem in the commodity sector. With that, those two markets poignantly pointing to oversupply in 2026. That's why are we close to a four-year low in crude? Why have we touched a five-year low in wheat? It really is coming to fruition that many in commodities and in world trade think that we are going to be oversupplied, especially in those two commodities. So that's the heart and soul of the grain market. The one big mover to the upside, live cattle, coming into Friday morning was up about 2.3%, very close to what corn was up. It's erased a lot of those gains on some fresh news from President Trump and some negotiations with Argentina and Brazil when it comes to the beef side of the equation. I think the market's kind of trying to put two and two together, that President Trump's talking about high beef prices, and he's also talking about working with Brazil, meeting with Brazil, and then working with Argentina as well.
This is a ticklish situation because it's balancing domestic and international kinds of policies. On the domestic side, two things that he'll want to be worried about. First, he's talking about high beef prices, so consumers. And then secondly, beef producers who will not be happy if prices are lowered in some way. And Secretary Rollins saying not expecting to make payments, so that's off the table. That means the Brazil and Argentina discussions are really important.
They are, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I think this is one of those marketing time periods where you can kind of just get away from the policy, and how welcome that is as far as getting away from the policy. What I mean by that, Todd, is you've got feeders at $375 roughly, and you've got corn at $416 before this week's rally. What does that mean? That means that feeders are 90 times the price of corn. You've never seen this is in the corn market like selling $8 corn right now. You know, and so I woke up this week and said, what am I doing not selling a feeder corn ratio of 90 to 91 times right now? It's like turning away $8 corn. So I instituted the beginnings of fourth quarter and first quarter of 26 hedges at the very beginning of this week. And a lot of clients called and said, what are you thinking with these new all-time highs? And I said, I don't care how high it goes at this point, we're making record profits. And I think this is really where it's at.
Okay, so that's for your livestock producers, cattle producers in particular. This would roll into both pork and poultry just because of the supply of beef that would be available in the United States. And it could have an impact, I suppose, on overall feed usage. What are you thinking, or have you considered this? I know it's really early in the process.
Yeah, I haven't considered it yet because we don't know the volumes at this point. But if we brought Brazil back, for instance, I think that's the most likely candidate because they want to be back. They are the volume leader. Australia has been losing some business to Brazil into China. It would make a lot of people happy, I think, if Brazil came back into the U.S. So if we brought that back, it's a substantial amount. It would probably bring back around the idea that will Mexico need to feed as much? And will we, work the spreads a little bit weaker in the corn eventually? But I think we still have to get through the issue of what is the size of the corn crop. And I think we talked about this, maybe not, but I'm at 184 national yield on corn, 53 or so on beans. I feel pretty good about beans with what I'm hearing from clients. I don't have to bring that down, but I think I'm going to be bringing the corn down as producers get into their last third of their corn in a lot of areas. It's just not performing, whether it's disease or flash drought. Talked to a real good client near Kankakee this week who had thought he had had some record yields, and this is one of several conversations with Illinois and Ohio clients in particular that they thought they had record yields, but it's just not there like they wanted it to be. So I think that's a crucial element before we get to Brazil. I will say on the corn side of the equation, as I kind of alluded to, without wheat and crude oil helping you go higher, you're probably going to find some resistance right above the weekly high. So 425, 430 area, pretty stiff resistance, very stiff resistance for beans at 1030. So if you need to dump something for cash flow, those are the numbers I'm looking at right now.
Before we close out our time together, the president met with President Putin this week, has seemed to have patched up something with President Xi, will be meeting with President Zelensky. The world landscape and policy is interesting, including the Middle East. Can you put any of those into perspective as they relate to the grain market and what that might mean going forward?
Yeah, I think that's an unbelievably astute observation that you bring up about Putin and Trump, because we are at near 4-year lows in crude oil, and the shale producers are starting to squawk that they can't really make any money below $60 a barrel in the U.S. So I think that it would do President Trump well from both a geopolitical standpoint, how he would be perceived in the world after the Middle East peace he's put together. And also helping the energy sector on ramping up biofuels and at the same time cutting the Russians out of their oil production around the world and increasing sanctions. I think that would give OPEC a real nice shot in the arm, give the frackers a nice shot in the arm, and build a bigger supply side in the domestic market and help us domestically here with the demand side on biofuel. So I could see kind of a multi-prism win-win-win-win if he would put sanctions on Russian oil. Plus, I think he'd make Putin come to the negotiating table a lot quicker and actually get something done.
We'll find out soon enough, I'm sure, or at least portions of it. Thank you, Mike. We'll
You
talk
bet.
with you again next week, probably at the regular time then. I appreciate it a lot.
That sounds good. Safe travels, Todd.
Mike Zuzlow is with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass is here from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hello, Eric. We sure would like some rain over the weekend. Sounds like we're going to get it. Now, you and I are talking on Thursday afternoon, and things can change, but at this point, you seem to think we're going to get quite a nice little rain shower, even here where we live.
All right, Todd. So there's four models. Ready? The European model has 1.9 inches. The GFS has 2.34. The AI model only has 0.8. And the National Blend of Models has 1.95. And the National Weather Service says 1 to 2 inches is expected. And I got to be honest with you, like, it's only going to make a dent in our deficits, but it's going to be the first time we have seen rain here in a very, very long time. And by the way, those models, well, they'll all be wrong, guaranteed. It's going to be something other than those numbers. But the reality is that to see such consistency in the forecast with the strength of this front coming through is going to be great. So don't, you know, it's not just the rain. It's going to come through very windy, and it's going to come through with the threat of severe storms. We do have the risk down to our south of seeing some severe storms. And behind it, the temperatures are going to knock off, Todd, but not a lot. Like by Sunday, our highs are only going to be like 60, right? But then I have a rebound in temperatures that follow that right away. But I want to tell you this. I think why, you know, we are so excited about rain is I'm looking right now at a national map that starts on August the 1st and goes to October 16th. And it ranks every climate reporting district by how much rainfall they've had compared to their historical numbers. And our historical numbers go all the way back to 1893. There is only one other climate reporting district in the country that is drier than us, and that is the one that is in northwestern Ohio. We are at 131, they're at 132. That tells you that we are having a top three driest late summer and early fall pattern on record. And even though this rain will make a dent in that, it's still going to continue to show up dry simply because of our soil moisture problems. So don't expect Trent Ford to make an adjustment in our drought monitor after this rain just because of how big of a deficit we've been in.
I had an indication of how dry it was this afternoon. I went up in expectation of rainfall this weekend and decided to clean the gutters under the pine tree. So there are a lot of needles in there. And offhand, I just put the ladder up and I took the blower up and started on one end, and I didn't actually have to move the ladder. I just dropped the blower into the gutter and it moved all the needles. That's how dry it was. That was a good indication. Apparently, you're telling me it's going to stay that way for how long? Do you think is this the first in a series, or is it just the first and only for a while?
Good. It is actually the first in a series. Now, will everyone come through and give us 2 inches of rain? I don't think so. But the pattern is starting to get active again. We watched a big momentum shift in the Pacific Ocean, spurred on by what we call a mountain torque event. That's happening all the way over by the Himalayas. But it's kicked off a more energetic, a more west to east facing piece of the jet stream. And so as that comes across the Pacific, it's going to prevent these just big, you know, blocking ridges from killing our rainfall chances. So I like it. I think we're going to get into a wetter pattern, and but the temperatures going to accompany that as we work our way toward the end of the month? And expect the temperatures to be volatile, but there's still more of a warm signal than there is a cold signal. But don't get me wrong, when it rains and the winds are blowing 30, 40, 50 miles an hour, it's going to be unpleasant as this first system comes through.
Turn your attention to South America. What are you watching there?
Well, I was a bit surprised when the data came out last Friday at the planting progress in Mato Grosso. I thought they would have maintained their, you know, really quick status. They were the fastest they'd ever been, well, at least in the last 5 years, through the first couple of weeks. And then they really fell off as the drier weather fell into place. Well, we know they're getting some better moisture over the next 7 days. It's not perfect, but it's better moisture. And some of the models are trying to turn them dry then again in week two. Now, what I care about, Todd, most is on November the 1st, how much did they get planted? So these next 2 weeks are going to be critical. Are they at 60% planted, or are they at 80 to 90% planted as they go into the month of November? And that will ultimately tell us what their calendar is going to look like. Now, we do have a La Nina that's brewing. National Weather Service and NOAA have kind of made it an official La Nina. We don't expect it to be strong, but if I'm in South America and I'm thinking about La Nina, we tend to do okay in Brazil's central and northern growing areas on moisture. It tends to be southern Brazil into Argentina that deals with very dry conditions. And we're not experiencing that yet. That's more of a midsummer for them or midwinter for us type phenomenon. But that would suggest that maybe it's southern Brazil and Argentina that maybe struggle to make bigger yields versus the rest of Brazil. But Todd, you know, I've seen some early estimates come out on, especially on the Safrinha crop based purely on acreage, that it may not be as large as last year. Have you heard something similar?
I've heard larger acres, so we'll see. I don't know. Why are you hearing that? Do you know?
Well, it was something about the mix this year and how many Safrinha corn acres they were going to go after. And so, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what that is. But I've heard, as you had heard, that the soybean crop is going to be absolutely massive. And they're going after lots and lots of acreage there.
All right. Hey, thanks much. We'll talk to you soon again.
Yeah, you bet.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions in Dagerbal. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can listen to it again at willag.org. Stay with us. Our Commodity Week program is next.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the October 16 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Thank you for being with us today. Our panelists include Aaron Curtis of Midco. He's in Bloomington Normal, Illinois. Arlen Suderman joins us from StoneX in Kansas City, Missouri. And John Zanker is here from Risk Management Commodities. It's a division of Zahner Ag Hedge. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. And there now you'll find a way to register for the Farm Assets and the Illinois Farm Economic Summit conferences. Both are listed there. They are December the 12th for the Farm Assets Conference in Bloomington at the Agris Center. You'll find all kinds of details about that event. It's day long. And then the Illinois Farm Economic Summits with the Ag Economist, and they'll be at the Farm Assets Conference too, but a shorter version on the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, half-day events that will take place the following week on the 15th, the 16th, and 17th in DeKalb, Peoria, and Mount Vernon. And you are allowed to come and ask questions of the Ag Economist at the U of I at either event. All the details for both are online at willag.org. Get yourself registered today. The Agri Center is a smaller venue, so there is a limited number of seats. So get yourself registered, and we'll see you on the 12th of December or the following week in one of those. Actually, I think you probably should go to both. Now, let's turn our attention to the marketplace and our panelists today, and we'll get a list of items that maybe we should discuss. Aaron Curtis, what's been on your mind this week?
Well, we had a nice little three-day bounce here on corn. We've been in largely a 20-cent range in corn for the last 6 weeks. So I guess the question is, you know, every time we kind of get back up in this mid to high 20s on D's corn, we kind of ran out of steam. Can we do anything with it this time around or not?
That is a good question, Arlen Suderman. I don't want you to answer that yet, but if you could give me a list of items that maybe you'd like to talk about today too.
Rare earth minerals and magnets, something a lot of people don't understand, but they are changing the dynamics of the negotiations now that have implications for soybeans.
And John Zanker at RMC. Your list.
Well, I'll stick on that China thing, but point out that here we are into the second week in October, no Chinese sales on the books, probably not going to be many Chinese sales on the books for several weeks. And October being October, November, those two big months, we need to see something happen or the show's going to be over here pretty soon.
Well, this show is going to go on for a little bit, so let's continue. I want to pick up Arlen with the question that Aaron Curtis had. After a three-day bounce and pushing above moving averages, particularly the 100-day in the December corn on Thursday, can it continue to make inroads to the higher side? And if so, why would that be the case?
Well, we presume that we're getting into the second half of harvest now. And typically, we oftentimes will put in the harvest, not a harvest low necessarily. I think we may have already put that in back in August, but we tend to put in a low right around the midpoint as we find storage places for the crop. We're able to put it away, and farmers don't like the price, so they hold on, particularly with the promise of money coming from the administration and maybe a second payment coming from Congress, tend to hang on. What I'm watching has been the national average cash price this year. It has run almost identical to a year ago. It's been following the same pattern ever since the 1st of September. And so as we look at it, this was the time a year ago when it started to slowly climb higher. That doesn't mean I'm bullish about corn prices by any means, but demand is strong, and it takes several hundred million bushels per week to keep that pipeline flowing. And just that draw on a weekly basis can start to firm prices up and start to pull us higher. And I think that possibility exists here for corn because of strong demand. And even when you look on a global side, our global stocks to use ratio has been trending lower for the last decade and continuing to do so. And I think that works in our favor as well.
Aaron Curtis, do you have an answer for your own question?
Yeah, I think I agree with Arlen that typically when we get past that 50% point, I mean, you know, we're probably 60% done here in Central Illinois. So obviously kind of over that halfway point. Question, I guess, probably is we know that quite a bit of space was used this year for beans just because of the basis situation, and yields on beans held in there relatively well considering expectations, being that it was extremely dry here at the end of the summer in a lot of parts of the Midwest. So, you know, do we have a little bit of a bean space that's capitalized corn space as we get a little further into harvest? We're going to know that here in the next week to 10 days, a little bit of a weather event coming in this weekend, but after that, it looks pretty clear again. So it looks like we're going to see quite a bit of harvest done on corn here in the next 10 days. So we'll find out if we need to move some more corn and or put it into some other space, be it the ground or as you say. But I think we also continue to watch this $4 cash mark on corn. So we're approaching that area, or if not exceeded in some parts of the Midwest. So we know the farmer went into harvest extremely undersold. So we've been seeing that $4 cash mark let loose of some bushels from the producer standpoint as well. So we'll see. You know, we're able to trade above the 100-day moving average or right at it today. We got the 200-day moving average setting up there around 438. We've got this little gap area from the summer back there around 432 and three quarters. So, you know, we get up into that 40-30 mark from a technical standpoint. We've got some junk to kind of get through in order to get this thing going. But I agree with Arlen. The demand base for corn is strong, and I think corn's got a pretty decent floor underneath it.
John Zenker, do you have a dissenting view at all?
Not at all. Agree with both Arlen and Aaron on that. I think we can move this higher due to demand, and that, you know, the biggest question maybe we have is, what's Iowa going to do with their corn yield? We just continue to hear all kinds of yields, and you know, I'm personally as confused right now about the state of Iowa as I've been on about any state in the last 44 years. So, you know, as soon as we get a little better direction on what's going on there, we'll have a little bit better idea on how high we can take this. But, you know, with the acreage increase, we can take the national yield down to 172, and it's still the largest production in history. So we have a lot of corn, and we're not going to 172, but, you know, we can certainly go to 180, 181, 182. While that might sound bullish, we need to remember we picked up $195 million on the stocks report, and the USDA is probably at least $300 million high on feed. So we'll need to use these rallies to get some additional sales on, I believe, in the coming weeks.
John Zenker is with Risk Management Commodities, a division of Zahner Ag Hedge, and was joined on our Commodity Week program recorded Thursday afternoon by Aaron Curtis of Midco and Arlen Suderman with StoneX. You may hear the whole of that program right now if you'd like up on our website at willag.org, willag.org, or search out Commodity Week in your favorite podcast application. Locations, and many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon.